Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Femuliner. Columbia commuters may soon be able to take advantage of new bus routes as part of an overhaul of the city's public transportation system. The project, dubbed Como Connect, could be up and running as soon as this August. The new plan scraps the use of Wabash Station as a central hub in favor of a connected network of neighborhood and downtown routes. Today on Intersection, I'll talk to the head of Columbia Transit and a council member about the city's proposed public transit overhaul. If you want to join in on today's conversation, give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection at kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So joining us here in studio today, Drew Brooks is the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia. In that position, he oversees Columbia Transit. Drew, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Ian Thomas is a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Ryan.
And we'd love to hear from you and our audience today as well. Do you ride the bus in Columbia? Why or why not? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection at kbia.org. You could also tweet at intersectkbia. So, Drew, quickly before we move on to the conversation we plan to have today about the future of Columbia Transit, just a little bit about what transit's been doing today with road conditions, if you wouldn't mind updating us, since obviously there's a lot of ice and snow and cold temperatures today.
So the first thing this morning, about 3 a.m., we got out and actually drove all of the routes and determined there were a few areas that we needed to detour that weren't quite as clear. There were a few slick spots out there. As you know, the assault and those type of things are not really working too well in most locations. It's just too cold for those things to work. So we opted to go on what we refer to as our emergency weather schedule, which means that we give the buses just a little more time on their routes. So we go from 40 minutes to 60 minutes on each route. So we slow it down a little bit, try to be as safe as we possibly can, and detour a few areas where necessary.
And then do we expect things to return to regular routes tomorrow?
We would hope so tomorrow. That it's supposed to warm up quite a bit to a balmy 25, I think. So,
but that's enough for us to get
roads that's right.
kind of
so
in shape.
Right? Hopefully the roads will be in much better shape. Even maybe by this afternoon, we might be back on a regular schedule.
Okay, great. Thanks for that update. Mm-hmm, so now sure. To the conversation we planned on having today before weather threw us a curve. So the plan Como Connect, I mentioned that in the introduction there. How does that differ from the current bus system? Drew, maybe tell us a little
sure.
about that.
Sure. So the current bus system is what we refer to as an orbital pulse system. Some people call it a hub-and-spoke system. But basically what that means is that all of the routes go out from a central location, which in this case is the Wabash Station, and they go out on a 40-minute route and come back and all make their transfers at that one location. Unfortunately, as the city has grown, we've really not been able to expand our service area at all because we can't get past that 40-minute window. What we've also run into is issues where if one route is late, then all of the buses are late because they're all waiting on transfers from that one late route. So what we're trying to do is move toward what's referred to as a networked system, much like you would see in most major cities where transfers are made out and about on the street, hopefully with a shelter nearby. That's the kind of the goal, is to move toward a system where transfers aren't done in one central location.
Right. And so also the buses will be running in both directions as well, right? I mean,
sure.
Basically, we'd have stops more. It seems like more commonly,
yes.
You'll have buses coming at
right.
Through the stops.
We're certainly going to hopefully reduce our headways or your wait times, mm-hmm. as you would call them, on the two core connector routes. So the two routes that run north and south and east and west that kind of connect the city back and forth through there. Those will have buses going in both directions. A bus should pass you roughly every 15 to 20 minutes on those routes. But the nice thing about that is if you're going from point A to point B, when you go back, you don't have to ride the entire loop all the way around. You can just take the bus going the opposite direction. So it should shorten people's commutes quite a bit. But connected into those two connector routes will be seven neighborhood routes. that will circulate through certain neighborhoods on a 30-minute schedule and then connect into those core connector routes.
Okay. And so, Ian Thomas, obviously being a former head of PedNet before you took over as a council member, this is obviously an issue you're very much involved in. What's been your impression of this idea, this plan?
Well, I was very pleased with the proposal that Drew and his team came up with back in May. I didn't even realize that this was in the planning. But as I looked at it, and I think I can speak for most of the rest of the council, we saw enormous advantages to this design of system over the current system. One of the things that occurs to me as I look at the new proposed system with the two connector routes going all the way out to the north, south, east, and west corners of the town, and the other buses maintaining their locations at those in those peripheral neighborhoods and business districts and employment districts, is that this is a much better distribution of bus resources throughout the whole city. At the moment, with every bus looping all the way back into the Wabash station, a lot of the buses are spending a tremendous amount of time in the central city, where, to be honest, bus service is perhaps less needed than it is further out. So this is really a better use of existing resources. The other thing that I see as I look at the new system is that this is a much better platform for expansion. And this is something that I have been hearing from PedNet members, from neighborhood groups, working on a grant that we received from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation under PedNet. Expanding our public transportation system was the number one priority to improve the health and access to jobs of low-income populations in Columbia. This has developed into a campaign that's called the Comet Campaign, Columbians for Modern Efficient Transit. And as a councilperson, I continue to hear from constituents that they would like to see the bus system improved. With Como Connect, I think we're in a much better place to find new public financing and expand that system.
Okay. Actually, we may hear from a constituent right now. We have Tim on the phone from Columbia. I wanted to bring in real quick. Tim, are you there?
Yep.
All right, great. Thanks for calling today.
Yeah, and thanks for having this show on, because this is one of my friends and myself's pet peeves. And, like, we're all retired, and I'm an alumnus of MU and disabled, and so we're all over the bus. I don't even own a car. So here's the thing. Get some maps down at the main hub bus station instead of saying go up there on Providence and get them. This is a problem. But I didn't realize you guys were in transit and it's going to take a year to transition stuff. The multiple hub, first time I heard it, that sounds fine once you start thinking about it. But the thing is, that hub, that's what we expect to get. I mean, like you used to do it. Get all your passes there, get your maps there, ask your questions there. Okay, see you later. And also frequency, I heard 30 minutes, and then I imagine, you know, stops are different. I live on Worley.
Worley, okay. Yeah, what routes do you use now? What routes do you use now, Tim?
103 West.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. It's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah, that stuff, see, changes. And we got to have access to maps, and they used to have them on the bus. Why, I can see they used to get wasted, I'm sure of it.
Okay.
But if you have to take that little, okay, I just want to say that little thing.
Sure, Tim.
Maps in the station.
Sure, and you give us a few other things to chat over, too. We really appreciate your call. Thank you very much. All right, so yeah, I guess one thing he brought up there, too, mm-hmm. was the idea of you're going to be changing the central location. I mean, right. Really, the central location is going to be eradicated, right?
Sure.
So what will that do for the usage patterns and the way people are used to using the system now?
Right. So, you know, everybody coming into the Wabash, that has become our customer service hub as well. So you can buy your passes, you can buy tickets, pick up maps, all of those things in that central location. We're now going to have to look at, on all of those other routes, different places where we can do that. So we're hoping that we'll be able to sell our passes and things at grocery stores, distribute maps on the bus. We're going to fully redesign the current maps. They're kind of a flimsy, disposable, and not very informative type of thing right now. We're going to go to a more sturdy brochure that we think that people will be able to hold on to a little longer, because we were going through quite a few of those, and I think that's probably what your caller is mm-hmm. alluding to. But we're going to have to realign kind of how we do the customer service piece of that as far as how we do pass sales and things like that, because we won't be doing them in one central location anymore.
And you mentioned Worley, if I'm not mistaken, that's mm-hmm. one of the main routes that's going to be
that's correct.
In one of
these so the, systems. So the number two, currently number two, red route actually goes up and down Worley just like it does currently. So,
mm-hmm. Right.
So that service level won't change. In fact, it will get better.
Right. In fact, it'll be going in both directions.
Both directions, yeah.
And mm-hmm. an average wait time of mm-hmm. about 15 minutes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what are some of the other things you've been hearing, I guess, from the community? You mentioned Ian before mm-hmm. you took the call there, some of the things you've been hearing. But what are some of the things, I guess, some of the criticisms, too, I guess, mm-hmm. Some of the things we've been working on and things we may change before this rolls sure. out?
Yeah, well, Drew's already hit on the public information about the bus system. The current timetable being a single fold-out sheet is quite difficult to use. Drew's talked about the plan, and I think I've got this right, yeah. that it's going to be a booklet right. where each of the nine or so routes will have a double-page spread
right.
with the map on one side and the timetable on the other. So you'll be able to very easily look at the map and see the stops and compare them to see what time the buses are coming on those routes, and then a fold-out just at the back, which shows how all the routes connect with each other. And of course, the connection points will be marked on the individual maps. Mm-hmm. I do think that moving to the to 35 connection points instead of really just one or two, if you count the south commuter connector, is going to really improve the service and the opportunities for people to use the bus for journeys without having to necessarily come all the way into downtown and go back out again.
I do want to take a moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuhl-Ulner, and today we're talking about the future of public transportation in Columbia. Joining me in studio are Drew Brooks, the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia. In that position, he oversees Columbia Transit. And Ian Thomas is a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. What do you think about the Como Connect plan? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925. Or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. Another thing that hasn't quite been sorted out yet, from my understanding, that we're still looking at is the downtown route that's going to be a part of this. So maybe, Drew, tell me a little about what we're thinking about here and what the options are.
Sure. So over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had a little bit of volatility in that particular route. We went from a route that was really a true orbiter of the downtown, just kind of orbited the outskirts of the downtown, hit the two major hospitals, and really just kind of circulated folks from the Wabash into the central location of the city. Then we went to the FastCat route, which was really targeted more towards students. Our ridership has diminished quite a bit since we instituted that route. So I think we learned a lesson there that if you focus in on one demographic exclusively, you might exclude a lot of other folks from riding the route, because mm-hmm. That route was really designed trying to get students to and from downtown and back and forth to campus. So we've got a separate survey up just on the downtown route with some proposals. Mostly what we've heard is that people would like us to get back to something similar to what we had before, which was an orbiter. I think there were a lot of people that used that route to connect to the hospitals and to mm-hmm. campus at large. So it looks like we'll probably be leaning toward something more like that in mm-hmm. the future.
But again, that may look different with Como Connect, right? Because
Correct.
The way you use it may be different. You may be transferring. Mm-hmm. And
that's right. So looking at where the transfers are going to be made is going to be crucial with that particular route.
So there are three options that we're looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, so we put up three options. We're obviously not wedded to any of those three mm-hmm. options. We're really looking for some feedback. And we have a separate survey. We have two surveys up right now. Those both close on January 10th, so on Friday. One of them is just about the overall project, and then the other is really about just that downtown route. So we're really looking for feedback on what people think those routes should look like.
Sure. And so, again, a big part, we haven't really actually broken this down and talked more about mm-hmm. it, but the fact that is that this would connect to what we're calling neighborhood routes, right?
Right.
Or the mm-hmm. idea of someone maybe using these in their neighborhood where they probably aren't using them at this point.
Correct.
Right.
So the seven neighborhood routes are really designed such that a person might not ever have to leave that particular route to do the day's business. We tried to make sure that there was a grocery store, schools, medical facilities, and a variety of different things that people do in a given day on a single route. Now, we're realistic. We know that people, you know, maybe they like to shop on the other side of town, but that's where you would connect from that neighborhood route to one of the connectors that would get you to the other side. But we wanted to make those routes very accessible so that someone could go get their groceries and get back, you know, in 15 or 20 minutes each way or less. So that's kind of the design of the neighborhood routes.
Mm-hmm. Ian, do you think that those will work? Do you think people will use them here in town?
Well, we'll have to see. I'll certainly be using them, and having a lot of different types of destinations on a single route is a very efficient way to help people use the bus system for many or most of their journeys. I think that what we're looking to do over the long term with the change to Como Connect, to these neighborhood routes, and with a view, a longer term view to expanding the system, is reduce people's reliance on their private automobiles, as well as provide a better service for the people who don't have access to an automobile, which includes a lot of different groups, senior citizens, people with disabilities, people on low incomes, children, youth, who could very easily, you know, use the bus system to get around if it were to serve their needs. And this really would be, you know, consistent with national trends that are going on right now. We passed a moment in kind of American history, which some people call peak car, in 2005. And since 2005, the total miles traveled per person in the United States of America per year has been steadily declining. And at the same time, we've seen big increases in transit use and bicycle commuting. And those statistics are even more emphatic with young people aged 16 to 34. They are driving less by almost a quarter since 2001 and have increased their transit use by 40% over that time period. Columbia is aspiring to be an urban community. We have a large university, a lot of young people here. I think we should be looking to the future and really building up our transit system and giving people the opportunity to use their cars less or maybe even own fewer cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what are some of the other factors? You mentioned a few of them there, but in drawing up these neighborhood routes and the routes in general, as you said, connecting to places where you can shop and things like that, but also, I guess, places where you can work, right? I mean, that's probably – and how much has that taken a role in drawing these up? And
sure, that's certainly a big piece of it. But one of our biggest problems is that our current hours of service, which we're expanding a little bit, we're changing everything to ending service at 8 p.m. 6 days a week, where right now we kind of have a sporadic evening service. But one of the biggest issues that we have right now is because we're trying to remain budget neutral with this project is that for people to work shifts that are outside of, you'd say, a 9-to-5 type shift, we really need to figure out how to expand service. Because if you work a job or you have to be there at 6 o'clock, well, we don't start till 6:25. If you work a second shift or a third shift, we can get you there, but we can't get you home. So we've purposely not designed these routes to kind of go into those areas where those type of jobs are, the shift type work is, but we hope that that's some place that we'll be able to expand to very quickly in the future if we find a better funding model and can expand our service hours, because that's one of the things we hear probably more than any other thing is they want us to go later, start earlier, and we hear those things. We've just got to figure out a way to fix the budget issue before mm-hmm. we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, that really is the key. We invest far less in transit in this community than many other similar communities, small college towns in the Midwest. And the ones that Drew and I have visited are Champaign-Urbana in Illinois, Lawrence, Kansas. Group also went to Ames, Iowa. In these cities, the transit service receives 3, 4, even 5 times as many public dollars per resident as in Columbia. And as a result, they can put on a service that starts very early in the morning, that goes late at night, that has a high frequency with typically 15, 20, maybe in the lower demand times, 30-minute headways, a Saturday service, a Sunday service, really penetrating into different neighborhoods and areas of the city so that people are within a short walk of the bus system. Once you get to that point, then the bus becomes a much more valuable resource to very many more people. So that's our goal to try to get there over the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good time to probably go ahead and talk a little bit about the funding structure and how do things work right now, I guess, for transit.
So right now we're funded from, I guess you would say, almost a mishmash, a variety of different funding models. We receive about $1.5 to $1.8 million a year from the transportation sales tax, which is shared between streets and the airport. We get about $2.1 million from the federal government through formula funding. We get a whopping $20,000 from the state of Missouri.
Has that gone up? I thought it was 15.
Yeah, it was 15, and we just got a little bit of a bump with some of the budget things that have happened at the state level.
You know, Champaign-Urbana gets several million.
$13 million.
$13 million in Illinois. From the state of Illinois.
That's right. So the state is certainly an issue, to say the least, there. We do have a contract with the University of Missouri for their shuttle service, which is about $1.2 million. And then fares account for about $400,000, which is about 12% of our total funding. So when you'll often hear people say, well, why don't you just raise the fares? Well, that doesn't really amount to that much. It's a highly subsidized service.
Yeah, probably even under the best circumstances, fares aren't going to cover it, right?
That's right. And nowhere in the world do fares cover public transportation. I think the best is in Germany, and it's still only subsidized by six, or the fares only recover about 40%. So it's just doesn't happen anywhere.
And so, Ian, being a council member, that's probably where something like this would have to start if we were going to look at possible new funding sources. What are some of the options or possibilities?
Well, there are a number of internal options to the city, but I want to start with an external one, which is the state of Missouri. As Drew said, allocation has just increased apparently from 15,000 to 20,000. That's exciting. But MoDOT has recently produced a new long-range strategic plan, which for the first time emphasizes transit as well as walking and bicycling as modes of transportation that the state is going to really take seriously and support and encourage people to use those modes. As we've discussed, if people are using transit more in cities, then they'll be driving less, less wear and tear on the roads. I think anybody can compare 20 people on a bus for a given series of journeys versus 20 people in 20 different automobiles or even in 10 different automobiles. The bus is a far more efficient use of our overall transportation resources. So MoDOT has recognized that. They've also heard loud and clear from voters and residents throughout the state. They've done a lot of outreach over the last 1 to 2 years, and the input has clearly indicated that people want to see better transit services as well as more resources going into sidewalks and bicycle facilities so that people are not so reliant on the car. As far as internal opportunities go, Drew mentioned that we currently have kind of a mishmash, and that's likely to be the way it's going to go in the future. I actually did a survey of constituents, people that are on my email list. At the time I did this, I think I had about 500 or 600 people that were receiving my emails, and this particular survey, I got responses from 137. It's obviously not a scientific survey.
It's something.
And I outlined a number of possible ways that we could expand funding for transit. A sales tax increase of a 20th of a cent on the dollar, a property tax increase of 12 cents per $100,000 of assessed value, a household utility fee, a parking permit fee increase, a hotel tax that's assessed on people that are visiting Columbia, a student activity fee that's assessed on students, and would, if it's implemented by the normal model, give students free access to the bus system. And I received responses. None of those on its own had more than 50%, but they all had between about 30% and 50% support. So I think we're going to have a more scientific survey citywide as to what particular form of public funding would people support if they indeed want to see transit increase. Out of my survey, only 21% checked the box that they don't support additional funding for transit.
Okay. But yeah, and one way or another, it probably will come down to voters, right, having to say, yes, this is something that's valuable to us and we want to pay more for this.
There may be some sort of administrative shifts that can be done on the small scale, but I think to see the kind of increase that we want to see, there will have to be some kind of a public vote or involving, you know, an external organization like the university promoting transit to students and assessing some kind of a fee.
Mm-hmm. What about this Como Connect plan? How is that getting paid for?
So the Como Connect plan is budget neutral. We basically just took the resources that we had and realigned them. So the plan is to not increase our budget in that process. So we're hoping that we're just doing something more efficient with the dollars that we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another question here. This one in the chat room from Pat. It has a little bit to do with the fares we talked about a little bit ago, but there are two subpopulations of residents who get preferred pricing for bus passes right now: parking garage patrons and students if their apartment complex arranges it. Would it be possible to make the year-round passes available for the rest of us at the same $10 per month and let us add that to our combined utilities bill so we can pay for it most conveniently?
I suppose that there are a variety of different concepts that could be done. I know that we're looking at looking at all of our pass options right now and how those will be sold to the public. I anticipate we will have an annual pass. I can't tell you what that price point would be in the process. We also hope to have what's called a daily pass that a person could buy right at the fare box, and it would just kick that out and you could use that all day. So we'll be looking at a variety of different options as far as how those are sold. That annual pass, we intend that to be something that the entire public can get to at some point. We're right now just kind of marketing that for the through this park and ride model that we're doing right now with the parking permits.
You mentioned earlier the Fast Cat idea, and with that, there was also some partnerships with apartment complexes mm-hmm. in town. What's going to happen to those as this change happens?
Sure. Well, we hope that we continue to have those relationships. They're very important to us, and we think that helps to keep a lot of traffic off the road, especially in the morning as people are commuting to and from campus. We've already spoken to many of those apartment complexes that were on the black and gold routes. And we'll continue to have those discussions so that they can continue to buy those passes for their students. We think that we're actually going to be providing an even better service for them with this system. The buses will be coming more frequent. They won't have to kind of all bunch up at the same time to get on the bus, so they'll be able to spread out their rides, which will make us all very happy to not have to put up multiple buses all at one time. So I think that we'll continue to pursue that model. I think that's still something that we want to do.
Sure. And Ian, we talked about this before, and the last mm-hmm. time you were on the show, that might ease some of these parking problems and things downtown, too, if we get to that idea you were talking about earlier of getting people out of the idea of moving a mindset of using a car everywhere you go and actually just using this bus as your primary mode.
Right. Well, as Drew just said, the black and gold routes have been very effective at alleviating our traffic congestion problems, which would have been very serious particularly after student apartments started cropping up in large numbers, thousands of students living down south of town. If they had all been driving cars, we'd have had some real problems, both with road capacity and parking availability. And that's a really good general point to bear in mind, because we really should view the transportation system that we provide to the residents of Columbia, including students, as an entire package, and think about the cost of road maintenance, the cost of widening roads, and the cost of providing public transit services. If there's a segment of the community, like students, for instance, that will very quickly embrace transit and adopt that as their primary mode of transportation, then it makes a lot of sense to really provide a good service for those people so that they do so. I think that we can make the case that transit is a great option for a wide range of demographics, and that's part of what I'm doing in my council work.
Sure. Let's take a quick break here. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the future of public transportation in Columbia. Joining me in studio are Drew Brooks, the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia. In that position, he oversees Columbia Transit, and Ian Thomas is a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. I'm Ryan Femuelner. We'll be right back after a short break. back. Welcome back to Intersection. This is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Fumulner, and today we're talking about the future of public transportation in Columbia. Joining me in studio is Drew Brooks, the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia. In that position, he oversees Columbia Transit. And Ian Thomas is a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. And for you and our audience, for those that use public transit in Columbia, what recommendations do you have? How could the city's bus system improve? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet at intersectkbia. So we talked a lot about the Como Connect plan in the first half, and one part we hadn't quite teased out. You did mention it, but we hadn't talked a whole lot about yet. It was the shelters that would go into place.
Correct.
Because there'd be so many transfers in this new system. So sure. So what's the plan there and the idea and what might actually work here?
So in the current system, we have 26 shelters. As Mr. Thomas mentioned, we are anticipating about 35 transfer points. Well, I'm no mathematician, but those don't add up. So we're going to need a few more shelters because we'd like to have one at every one of those transfer locations. We'd love to have one at every bus stop if we could, but obviously that's not feasible. So we do have some grant funding that we're looking to apply toward that. But we're also hoping to work with some students at the university to actually help us design some different types of shelters this year. So in this semester, I believe that it's going to be taken on as a project that will look at some very efficient ways of designing those. And then over the summer, we'll look at different ways to implement those because we need to get more of those out there. But we want to, there's a variety of things that we want a shelter to do. Right now, the ones that we have are just kind of barely adequate. So we want something that we can provide a lot of information with as well, so that if the technology improves to where we can put, you know, the type of signing that would actually display route timing and things like that on there, we'd love to do that. But in the interim, obviously having maps and schedules and all of those things in those shelters is very, very important. Good lighting is very important to us. If we can have solar lighting and things like that, that's at the top of mind. And, of course, plenty of access for all of our citizens, including those with disabilities, that can get under the shelters, especially on a day like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Today is kind of a relevant day to talk about that, right?
So, absolutely.
But yeah, because now I guess now they're being used mainly people who are waiting for stops, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Where now
that's correct.
The transfers really would make it a different component where people will be kind of exposed more. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But the payoff is the quicker times.
Yeah, because our hope is that we'll get these routes timed really, really close so that the person isn't going to have to wait for a lengthy amount of time. But just like with the current system, if your bus that you're transferring to is late because of traffic, it's a football game weekend or an accident, something happens, we don't want you to have to stand out in the elements if that's the case. We do have a nice warm bus station right now where you can wait. We won't have that necessarily in the future, so we want to come up with some alternatives.
In the city, Ian, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the call for a request for more shelters and better shelters is something that I hear a lot as well. When people are just waiting for the bus, not even with the sort of transfer situation. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a very popular improvement if we can, you know, allocate funds for better shelters. Drew mentioned the information about the bus coming, and I think one thing that we probably both want to really emphasize, and I think that a lot of people are still not aware of, is that there is now an app that you can get on your smartphone which will show you a map of every Columbia Transit bus route and where the buses are right now. So if you are in a coffee shop, as I was today, with the bus stop kind of across a parking lot, I can look up and look at that app and see when the bus is just about, you know, half a mile away. And that's my timing to run out to the bus stop and be there. I don't have to be standing out so long. That information could be picked up by the bus shelter itself. And you see this in a lot of other cities. Mm-hmm. And people can just be continually looking at an information board that's telling them that the next 101 South bus is coming in 5 minutes, in 4 minutes, and so on. I think that will improve the bus riding experience a lot for people.
Sure. And I guess one other thing I was going to mention, too, was the city did apply for a grant, I think, a federal grant for this, and unfortunately didn't get it.
Yes.
So what's the idea now? What other grants are we going to apply for this?
Well, we are always applying for grants. they have dried up a little bit. There's not quite as many as there used to be. For many years, we would get earmarks, but as we all know, that's kind of dried up a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. So any grant opportunities, we're definitely applying for those. But I think what we're going to end up having to do is expend more local dollars on things like this. We won't be able to wait for a federal grant to necessarily do all of these type of things, especially when it comes to shelters. We're still going to have to do that when it comes to buses because that buses are extremely expensive, almost $500,000 per bus. But for shelters and things like that, I think we're going to have to start looking at, you know, expending local dollars for those type of things, because I think they're needed improvements that we really need to do.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to move on to, we talked earlier about how ridership and fares aren't going to pay alone for the system, but at the same time, ridership's important, right?
That's
so,
right.
So what are some of our goals for ridership, and what do you think are the realistic goals here in Columbia?
Sure. Well, in 2010, we did, at the time, what we thought was a pretty major revision of the routes. It's nothing compared to what we're doing today. And we saw about a 13% increase in ridership. We expanded to some areas that we'd never been to before. With Como Connect, with this project, we're dramatically expanding into areas that we've never been to before, getting all the way out to Lake of the Woods, to Scott Boulevard, two areas that have probably been two of our biggest requests for 10 years, probably. And so I would anticipate that we'll see at least a similar growth rate, but I would think probably even more, because I think that this system, the way we're designing it, is going to be accessible to people who maybe don't necessarily need public transportation, but they can make a choice now to use it because the frequencies will be better. The buses will be, shorter wait times, shorter total overall trip times. So I think that we'll see people who will start to use it because they can actually make the choice to use it, whereas right now it's a very inconvenient choice. You really only use it if you have to use it, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's really about it. And my ward, the fourth ward, is perhaps the worst served ward of all six in terms of public transit services. And yet I hear from a lot of people who do own cars and use their cars for almost all their journeys that, you know, if the bus system were more frequent, if it came closer to where they lived, if it was convenient and would drop them off close to where they want to go, then they would absolutely use it. It would avoid the hassle of parking, the hassle of driving. A lot of people in my ward have strong environmental philosophies, and riding the bus is a way to reduce our total carbon emissions. And people see it actually as a quality of life issue to be on the bus system and without all of the stress of driving. So I'm very hopeful that when that light green route, I think it is, comes down in the southwest corner of town, Scott Boulevard and Forum, that'll be a very well used route, and I'll certainly be making sure that my constituents are aware of it.
Right. Right. I guess, too, if we do branch out into new areas, really Columbia Transit is going to have to make a big effort in promotion here as well,
right?
And
that's
so what are some of the ideas we have there? And
well, we have a marketing specialist for the first time ever, and we actually have a marketing budget this year for the first time ever. So we actually are looking at a variety of different ways of reaching out. I know that our social media presence is something that we've been pushing incredibly aggressively over the last couple of years. But we're going to have to do some more conventional type things, whether it's radio or print or different things to really get the word out there. It may involve just things like door hangers and things in those neighborhoods where we're going to be now, because we really want to get that word out. We don't want people to be surprised when a route moves that they might be using right now. And we also would love for them to know when that route's going to get there when the new ones arrive.
Right. And again, tying into that digital space may address some of that as well.
Absolutely.
Right, right. And so I guess, too, again, Ian, we talked about this earlier, but, I mean, we just keep coming back to the idea of, you know, it's just an option at this point. Mm-hmm. It's not a very good option for some people, but really what many people would like to see is something that is the first choice, right? The culture of car ownership is not necessarily where your
immutable
mind goes immediately. Yeah,
right.
Exactly, which for many people, as you said in your ward, that's kind of the case, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, you can sort of estimate some criteria at which a lot of people would make that other choice. If the nearest bus stop is a 5-minute walk away, if they know when they get there that even if they've just missed a bus, there's another one coming in about 15 or 20 minutes, if it's going to drop them off within a 5-minute walk of where they want to end up, if the bus is going to run till, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the evening, if there's going to be 7 days a week service. I think that if we can get the funding to the level that we can provide that service, we will see an enormous increase in usage. Right now, with the low frequency and the particularly in southwest and southern parts of town, relatively low density of the bus routes, people aren't even considering it as an option. They think that the car is the only option. But Como Connect will start to address that. I think we can leverage some new funding ideas to make some small expansions in the near term, and then look for a major new funding source to get us to that level, which I think we need to double or treble the operating budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned earlier the public health aspect of this as well. I mean, in your work at PedNet, there mm-hmm. was a health impact study that was done there. Talk a little about that.
Well, sure. In general terms, if you look at national statistics, communities that have a good public transit system and one where a high percentage of the residents use the public transit system, a much higher percentage of the residents get the CDC recommended level of physical activity every day of about 20 to 30 minutes walking or more vigorous activity every day. In other areas where the automobile is the primary mode of transportation, people fail to get that because there are not any other opportunities in their sort of lifestyles to get that physical activity. There's other good research that shows that trying to get your physical activity levels up by joining a gym or by doing special extra things, going for a jog and going for a bicycle ride as an exercise activity, are not very successful. But once you build physical activity into your routine, because you always do that quarter of a mile walk to the bus stop morning and afternoon, and then maybe a little walking at the other end, builds it in and people don't even notice it. So people have better health where you have good public transit.
And to that point, too, we just met with some physicians and administrators with the University Health System, and what they've told us is that one of the greatest barriers, and this is nationwide, the greatest barriers to getting to a healthcare appointment is transportation. That reliable transportation is just incredibly a barrier when it comes to it. If the bus is not on time and you miss your appointment, then you're kind of out of luck. So we really looked at that health impact assessment when we started designing these routes, looking at healthcare facilities and where they're located and making sure that all of those are on routes.
I want to take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Samuelner, and today we're talking about the future of public transportation in Columbia. Joining me in studio are Drew Brooks, the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia. In that position, he oversees Columbia Transit. And Ian Thomas is a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. And for you in our audience, let us know what you think about this issue today by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So another big thing that's coming through the pipes here, we talked a lot about Como Connect, but there's also this Columbia Area Transportation Study Organization. Ian, maybe tell me a little about that. And how that fits into kind of this long-term plan here for the area.
Sure. The Columbia Area Transportation Study Organization, or CATSO, is our sort of federally defined metropolitan planning area. There's a committee which includes representatives from the city, the county, and the state, MoDOT specifically, both elected and senior appointed officials, that develops a long-range plan for using federal dollars and combining those with local dollars for transportation purposes. Every 5 years, that long-range plan is required to be updated, and we're actually going through that process right now. So I would encourage everybody who's got an interest in the future of transportation in Columbia to go to the City of Columbia website, to type CATSO long-range transportation plan into the search field, and that should take you pretty quickly to this update. There is a survey at that website where people can express their preferences for how Columbia should be developing its transportation system using federal and local dollars. And that survey is open till January the 27th, I believe. And we're expecting that the CATSO Coordinating Committee will formally adopt the latest update at its meeting on February the 22nd. I would like to just reference some of the goals and objectives that are in that update. This is
sure.
a 100-plus page document. So
yeah, we don't have time for the whole thing.
But the goals and objectives are really very, very telling. As far as the plan update references streets and highways, there's a very strong focus on maintaining the system that we have right now, fixing the potholes, keeping the traffic moving, but very little emphasis, if any at all, on expanding that highway system, because people recognize that's extremely expensive with purchase of right-of-way and not having the space to add lanes and so on. So I think we're going to see much less of that sort of highway expansion. But there's an enormous focus on other modes of transportation. Objectives like improve and expand infrastructure for pedestrians, bicyclists, and people with disabilities, expand and redesign the existing transit system, support and promote public transportation in the city, identify and address the needs of minority and low-income populations and those who do not own a car, reduce reliance on the automobile. I'm just reading from some of these goals and objectives. So I'm very encouraged that with a plan like this, which the Planning Department or the Community Development Department has put together after listening to community input, one other plan that they relied on heavily, which reflects all of these values, is the Columbia Imagined Comprehensive Plan, which the council adopted a couple of months ago, which again shows a very firm focus on transit and walking and bicycling, where that's a reasonable option, to develop those modes of transportation rather than assume that everybody will complete every journey by car. With these goals and objectives in here, with this being tied to the allocation of federal and local funding resources, I'm very confident that in the long term we will see more funding going into the transit system and less focus on large highway expansions, intersection expansions, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And so, but at the same time, communities all around the country are going to be competing for this money as well, right? From states and from the federal government too. So that seems, how difficult is this going to be to get those funds? All the conversations we're having today always come back to funding, right?
Sure.
And so, how difficult is that going to be, do you think?
Well, I think that most of these funds are on a formula basis. So, based on our population, based on our distribution. We receive certain allocations from the federal government. Now, of course, the future of federal funding is also, there are questions about
sure.
it because the federal highway gas tax trust fund is shelling out a lot more money than it's taking in. There are conversations about how to fund transportation. There's little political appetite for increasing either the federal or the state gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that says to me is that if the funding is coming from other sources, such as property taxes, sales taxes, utility fees, rather than the gas tax, then all the more reason to be able to put a higher proportion into non-automobile modes.
Okay. And so, I guess, Drew, too, on CATSO, what have you seen in that process as well, and what kind of highlights are there for you?
Sure. Well, I sit on the technical board of CATSO, and so we look at this very, very closely, our input is vital. In fact, it's required that the FTA and the federal government requires that transit have a very active role in that. So from the top down, there's a lot of requirement that there's a transit involvement. We're looking at this as a stepping off point for a master plan that we're hoping to develop over the next couple of years. We hope that after we're done with the COMO Connect implementation, that we'll then start working on a full blown master plan, because we really haven't had one that we've been updated in several years. So I think that now is the time to really look at that and look at what the future of transportation and public transportation specifically in Columbia is.
And I think going back to some of the statistics I mentioned at the beginning of the program about peak car happening in 2005, mm-hmm. and young people in particular starting driving, owning their first car at much later ages, using public transit and bicycling for essential journeys at much higher rates than ever before, all points to sort of the future direction that people are going to go. And there's no reason to think Columbia is going to be any different from other towns and cities. One of the things that I think is becoming increasingly apparent to people is the high cost of owning and operating a car. Mm-hmm. And the average car owner in the United States spends $9,000 a year simply to own and operate that car. Part of that is the depreciation and the value of the car, and the rest goes in the operating expenses, from maintenance and repairs to gas to tax and insurance and so on. If a two-car family can downsize to a one-car family because we've got a good bus system, we already have a really good system of bike lanes and trails, so that biking is a much better option and a much more utilized option now compared with 10 years ago, maybe a tripling in the number of bicycle journeys people are doing as counted at typical locations. Then a two-car family can really save $9,000 a year and just have one car and maybe be a little more flexible in how they manage all of their transportation resources. That's $9,000 that people can spend on other priorities, and possibly including paying an additional sales tax or something that helps fund the excellent public transit system.
Sure. We actually have a caller on the line I wanted to bring in, Ruth from New Bloomfield. Ruth, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, yeah, thanks for calling in today.
You're welcome.
So what did you want to talk about there?
I think I missed the window to bring this up, perhaps, but to mention that I want to speak up for having some sort of, I know the plan is to do away with the Wabash Station as a hub, but and that's fine. I think that I like the plans that we've talked about. I would like to speak up for having some sort of central place that would be accessible by several bus routes to do customer service, to have a warm or cool place to wait, I live in New Bloomfield, which is 20-something miles away, and obviously I have to drive to Columbia, but when I get there, I can park my car and take the bus all around town, and I do that. So I appreciate having a central place, okay?
Sure.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure. No, yeah, Ruth, thanks. Miss the window. We'll talk about it. Thanks
for
the
call. Fair enough. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, when we keep talking about the Wabash Station going away, well, it's not going anywhere. It's just not going to be the central hub. We anticipate that at least probably this downtown route will interface with that station. It will continue to be our operation center for the time being. It was a federally funded project, and we're required to have it have some sort of transportation usage for 20 years, and that project was completed in 2007. So we have to have some usage for it for transportation. So we'll continue to use it for the foreseeable future for some sort of transportation purposes.
Sure. And, yeah, I guess, again, retaining that older method is maybe important too, even though a lot of digital space can replace a lot of these things.
That's right.
But there are going to be a lot of users that aren't as digitally inclined.
That's
right?
Correct. So we're going to have to use all technologies, whether old or new, to make sure that we're communicating to everyone.
Sure. Again, the idea of her, I guess, also commuting in to use. I mean, really, that's something we're talking about. We would like to see more of it. You both kind of almost seemed surprised when she said that. But like that idea, is that something we're also keeping in mind? Is, I mean, it seems like a lot of times we're talking about people that already live in Columbia and are trying to get from home to work, things like that. But populations too, I guess.
Yeah, and I think long term that we'll have to start looking at more regional transportation. I think there's definitely a desire to have more connections with other communities, whether it be with Jefferson City or Centralia or Boonville. There's already a private provider who's basically doing a commuter service between Columbia and Jefferson City. So I think that we'll start to see as we kind of move out in the next few years that we'll start looking at a more regional plan for transportation. We've been really focused on the city for a long, long time, and that's our goal, obviously, as members of the city. But I think overall that we'll start to see some expansion into more regional type transportation.
But kind of what I'm hearing is we kind of need to get things here figured
that's
out
right.
first, right?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because, I mean, again, especially with the neighborhoods and the growth outside of town, I mean, the system we were using before, as you mentioned early on in the show, ridership was down. I mean, we had some issues.
That's right. And, I mean, the city is now, I think, 64 square miles or something like that. That's and our population density is quite low. So, getting to the population within the city is actually quite an endeavor. We have to actually use some miles to get to those areas. Yeah.
Yeah. Thinking of Ruth's habit of driving into town and then using the bus to get around, which I think makes a lot of sense, if she, particularly if she doesn't like city traffic or that kind of thing, reminds me of the fact that there's a tremendous number of people who work in the downtown area for the city and for private businesses who live outside city limits. And we do have some kind of park and ride initiatives, but I think that is a growing opportunity, especially as parking in the downtown area is, you know, a big problem, something that local businesses that require customer traffic, such as restaurants and shops and so on, are very aware of, very concerned that it's difficult for their customers to find somewhere to park, and that that affects their business and it affects how many people come downtown to shop and eat and recreate and so on. One thing that Drew and I have discussed that that I'm hopeful we will continue to grow as an idea is encouraging through sort of discounts and so on downtown employees to use the bus to get in, whether they live in the outskirts of Columbia or if they live out of town, to drive and use the bus to come down and keep those parking spaces free for the customers who've just come downtown for sort of a short time. We've spent an enormous amount of money on public parking structures over the last several years, and we really don't want to spend any more. I think if we're putting more money into downtown transportation resources, we want to be improving the bus system so that we're using our valuable downtown space much more efficiently than bringing in cars and storing thousands of cars.
We only have a couple minutes in the show left, but I guess one thing we didn't actually spell out here is what the timeline is going to be like on a lot of the things we've talked about today. So maybe specifically for Como Connect, Drew, what's the timeline here?
Right. So we've spent the last six or so months since May of last year, a little longer than that now, trying to get the word out to the public. We've done meetings in the wards. I've myself conducted 30 or 40 meetings myself trying to get the word out. And our hope is then we were going to present all of our findings, the survey information, to council in February. We'll have two public hearings at the meetings in February. And then we would hope that at the second meeting that council would give us the green light to proceed with the project. Then the real heavy lifting will begin, where we're literally moving shelters and signs and teaching everybody the system and printing new maps and all of that type of stuff. Our goal is to have it fully implemented by August 4th of this year. And we'd like to maybe start doing some phase-in in July, where we could kind of phase in some of the new routes along with the old, so people could have a cushion there to learn. But right now, the most pressing need is we want to keep getting feedback. If you go to comoconnect.org, we have our surveys up through Friday, and we'd love to get feedback there. There's a really good video up that you can watch. It's about 7 minutes that explains the entire system of what we're trying to do. And there's maps and all of the resources you need there, so you can take a look at those and take the surveys. We'd really like your feedback.
Okay. Well, that's actually all the time we have for today's Intersection. Thanks very much to our guests, Drew Brooks, the multimodal manager for the City of Columbia, and Ian Thomas, a council member for Columbia's 4th Ward. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection is produced by Raymond Tungekar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Caleb Hoke. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. And I'm Ryan Femuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.